people on a weekly basis on just a variety of issues in their lives. One of the action steps that I find myself constantly telling people is just really simply to trust the Lord. Right? I know it's not that simple, and there's a lot of ways that we need to trust the Lord, and a lot of forms it takes. But in essence, a lot of the advice that I give to people is you got to really trust God with this particular situation, and you need to act on that trust by doing this. And then usually when I say those words, you need to trust, you need to put your faith in the goodness and the sovereignty of God, usually I'm met with some form of disbelief. Sometimes it comes out as like, I know that, but I've tried it and it's not working, right? And that's why I'm still having these problems. I'm like, I know that, but I'm struggling to do it. And other times the response that comes back is, yeah, I hear you, but I just can't. And it's just really hard for me to trust God in this particular circumstance. And so I've come to the conclusion after all that, which is a conclusion most of you probably already came to, that faith is really hard. Trusting the Lord is a really difficult thing. It's so important, right? We know that. It's central to our spiritual life. But yet it's so hard sometimes. Does anyone feel that way? I know I do. I know sometimes I feel like, man, just simply trusting God, as easy as that sound is, so in practice, so hard to do. I want to read a couple of quotes here. The first comes from Larry King. He says, "I cannot make that leap that a lot of people around me have made into believing that there's some kind of God and judge somewhere. I have a lot of respect for true people of faith. I've done so many interviews on it. I've always searched. But as someone said, did you ever sit down and read the Bible cover to cover? And the answer is no, because I don't know who wrote it. I remember as a kid, my father died when I was young, and that was unexplainable to me. The God of the Old Testament, I didn't like the things that he did. Abraham, sacrifice your son. That always bothered me as a kid. I remember thinking, why would he do that to Abraham? As a test? So I said to myself, I don't know. I just don't know. And I feel like I'm too in my head to be into faith. Faith is a wonderful thing. I envy people who have it. I just cannot make that leap." Another quote here from a man named Marty Sampson, who is a Christian musician who wrote many praise songs, who recently admitted that he no longer believes in Jesus. He writes, "Time for some real talk. I'm genuinely losing my faith, and it doesn't bother me. Like, what bothers me now is nothing. I'm so happy now, so at peace with the world. It's crazy. This is a soapbox moment, so here I go. How many preachers fall? Many. No one talks about it. How many miracles happen? Not many. No one talks about it. Why is the Bible full of contradictions? No one talks about it. How can God be love yet send 4 billion people to a place all because they don't believe? No one talks about it. Christians can be the most judgmental people on the planet. They can also be some of the most beautiful and loving people. But it's not for me. I'm not in anymore. I want genuine truth, not the I just believe it kind of truth. Science keeps piercing the truth of every religion. Lots of things help people change their lives, not just one version of God. I have so much more to say, but for me, just keeping it real, all I know is what's true to me right now, and Christianity just seems to me like another religion at this point." So I want to address the question today, why is faith hard? It's not easy for some people and hard for others. It's hard for everybody, even those people who genuinely believe and who are persevering in it. All right, well, why is it hard? How come some people who like Larry King, want to believe, but just can't? And how come others who did believe, like Marty Sampson, how is it that they just stop one day? Right, even for us who do have faith, like, why is it such a fight every single day to keep it and to keep going in it? Why? And so the passage that we're in today, we just started 1 Corinthians. We're still in chapter 1 here. The context of the passage today is not directly about that, okay? The context of the passage we're going to read is actually Paul addressing to this church in Corinth about different divisions and arguments they're having in the church, and we're going to come back to that next week, Okay, we're going to do a couple of weeks on different reasons why there are divisions in the church. But because this particular passage also is really critical and important for understanding faith and for understanding some of these whys of why it's hard and why people fall away, I feel like we need to focus on it. And so I'm going to apply it that way today. So this week we'll be in 1 Corinthians 1, 18 to 25, and we'll come back to it next week, and we'll apply it in two different ways. But anyway, for today, let's read it, okay? 1 Corinthians 1, starting verse 18. Paul writes, "For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, 'I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart.' Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs, and Greeks seek wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men." All right, so what do we do with this? So I feel like the way that this passage sets up our answer to that question I posed, why is faith difficult, is at first it gives us the diagnosis of the problem. And the diagnosis, according to Paul, right, according to the Bible, is that we tend to exalt human wisdom. Human wisdom is legitimate. We just give it pride of place that it's not supposed to have in the grand scheme of things. I mean, that's in the end, the two quotes I read, I mean, that's what trips up a Larry King and a Marty Sampson. It's and pretty much anyone else who just cannot make that leap into faith, right? What keeps them from getting there is just not being able to fully get their minds to comprehend something about God. Right? Their wisdom fails to get there. In a way, they're not the first ones. If you think about it, Adam's sin in the garden, you guys remember this? What causes him to disobey God? The first sin that led to all the other sins. God placed many trees in the garden. You can eat from any of them. The one you can't eat from, he says, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so sin, in a way, originates because a man, Adam, was not content with the knowledge that he had. Right? He had this longing for some kind of wisdom that was beyond him, a wisdom that he wasn't supposed to have. And that's still what drives humans today. This idolatry of human wisdom, wanting and needing to understand everything. Right? Isn't that the human race? Like, we're always on this quest to, like, just understand and know everything about what's around us, right? Space exploration and deep sea exploration and needing to map the human gene, all that, right? The human gene sequence. It drives us. It drives us crazy if we're not able to explain the world around us. MIT, the mission statement of that school is to generate, disseminate, and preserve knowledge and to work with others to bring this knowledge to get this, okay? It says, to bring this knowledge to bear on the world's greatest challenges. I feel like that mission statement really captures the spirit of the age as a whole. We have this notion that human wisdom can solve all the problems if we can just figure it out and know things. And so we put our confidence and the authority we place on, you know, data and analytics, and we exalt TED talkers and subject matter experts, right? If we just know more, everything will be better. Now, it doesn't mean that we're anti-science. I know sometimes Christians get accused of that. I'm not anti-science. I feel like it's ridiculous for us to be that way, because in the end, what science does is explains how God works. Right, and explains God's creation. But the point is we as humans, and part of the pride and the sin that we have, is we elevate human wisdom to the point of authority, ultimate authority, if you will. But the argument that Paul makes here in this passage, he says human wisdom is fine. It's not saying that it's not legitimate. He's just saying there are limitations to human wisdom. It's not the highest wisdom. I mean, this is just a really obvious observation from the passage here. But he says that, you know, like, there is a wisdom that in comparison to ours makes ours look like foolishness. Okay? There is a higher being out there, right, who can understand the things that we can't. Right? Again, we can understand many things, and we can improve quality of life for people in many ways just through our own human wisdom. But it says there are things that we cannot explain too. Okay? There are things that require somebody who is sovereign and somebody who created all things and somebody who is all-seeing. Okay? Why we're here, why we exist, why there is suffering. There are some things that human knowledge is never going to attain to because it's not the highest wisdom out there. But more importantly than that, okay, talks about how the wisdom of this age, right, we got to understand that there's a cap and a ceiling to it. Paul goes on. There's another really key and maybe more important limitation to human wisdom, and it says human wisdom ultimately cannot know God. That's really the limitation that we have to understand about it. It's just, it cannot know God. It attempts to quantify God. It attempts to prove God. And maybe in some ways it can, but it can never know God. And the smartest people in the world are sometimes the people who are the farthest away from God. I remember reading one time about Stephen Hawking, how he said that he found it strange in himself that he believed in aliens and not God. Because he said, you know, there's evidence for neither. There's not evidence for aliens, and there's no evidence for God. But for some reason, and he writes this, I find myself in my heart believing for some reason that aliens exist. He had more faith in aliens than in God, and a lot of people do, actually. Probably more people believe in aliens than in God, even though there are a million more times of evidence and signs of the existence of God than there are for aliens. Why? Well, because human wisdom alone cannot get to faith. There is a divide there. Human wisdom can only get to a certain point, after which faith has to take us the rest of the way. And with God, that divide will always be there until we can admit that there is a limit to what we can understand and to our own wisdom. I mean, even those who acknowledge God, okay, even those who believe, right, who follow, sometimes we think that the answer to our spiritual problems is just to learn more. A lot of people, they'll come to me, they got some kind of problem, and they'll say, can you recommend a book? For me, I'm not against reading Christian books at all, right? I say, can you recommend a book for me, right? Like more Bible studies, more discipleship, as if the core problem we have is lack of information. But see, that's how we think. We think the knowledge is going to solve things. And there are many people who know a lot about God, know a lot of Bible, know a lot of theology, but they're not experiencing the real transformation of the Spirit. They're not, because there's a difference there. There's a limitation. There are many Christians who struggle with faith because they subscribe to this worldly notion of human wisdom is everything. They make judgments and conclusions about God solely based on their logic or even emotions. Right? And the attitude there is, if I can't see it, if I can't quantify it, if I can't feel it, can't be true. But what are we doing in those situations? I need to understand. And my understanding really determines what's truth for me. And when we say that and when we act like that, we really have become just like atheists who also, just like us many times, we exalt human wisdom. And we make it our truth. To those who do that and who approach God and spirituality with that kind of perspective, they're going to find faith really hard. Faith is already hard. But they're going to find faith almost impossible, because there's a limit to that. Okay, so that's the first point that Paul makes. But instead, he says, what you need to do is not suspend human wisdom. Again, we can use it. There's a lot of good that it can do. But instead of exalting human wisdom, he says, instead, we need to exalt God's wisdom. That's the key here. Right? The real key to having faith and sustaining faith is you need to have God's wisdom trump human wisdom in terms of the authority that you have, that has over your life. And the whole passage really centers around this. The whole passage is like, okay, what is God's wisdom like? And the biggest point here is, how do you know God's wisdom? And the point is really simple here. The fullest display of God's wisdom, right, he says it's the cross. Christ crucified. If you want to move beyond the limitations of human knowledge and you want to have something that human knowledge cannot give you, which is real faith, transformative faith, then you need to look to the expression, the fullest expression of God's wisdom, which is Jesus Christ crucified. I think in this one statement here, preaching Christ crucified, or looking at Christ crucified, and how that's wisdom for us, I thought of four angles to this, okay? Four different ways where the cross is God's wisdom to us. Okay? The first way is that the cross, or Christ crucified, it answers questions about God's character. And a lot of these difficult questions people have about Christianity really do center on the character of God. You know, why does God send people to hell? Why is there suffering in the world? In the end, it's a questioning of who he is and the ways that he tries or that he wants to work. Well, the cross helps us understand that. I know there's many answers to these questions, right? Many viable, logical, coherent answers, but ultimately the underlying answer to all these questions is the cross holds it. Because what does the cross say? Because what you see on the cross is you see so many different aspects of God. And one that we overlook is on the cross, you see a God who is just. Okay? A God who is just, which he has to be in order to be a God that's worth worshiping, which he has to be in order to be a God who's loving. Because how can God be loving and not call evil into account? How can God be loving and not exact justice and be heartbroken and offended by injustice in the world? Right? It's that justice that really comes out of a loving and good God that necessitates the existence of hell. Right? But also on the cross, I mean, that's just one part of it. Also on the cross, you see a God who, he needs the justice because of his goodness, but he chooses to exact that justice on himself. He's a God who, he experienced hell himself. So it's not a God who is just, people gotta go to hell, but a God who experienced it himself so that people wouldn't have to, that they would have the choice not to. The cross reveals a God who allows suffering, because suffering is ultimately and mysteriously needed for his good plans, and we know this is true. The cross says it all. Right? The greatest suffering ended up in greatest good, and it proves that God can not only be good in suffering, but that he has legitimate purposes for suffering. And he sympathizes with those who are in suffering and comforts them and can help them because he went through it himself. And Christ crucified, whenever we have doubts about God's character and his goodness and his love, you just look at the cross. It's God's wisdom there. A second way that the cross is the wisdom of God is it shows us the way to God. And we talked about this already, but this is where human wisdom falls short, right? It can gain all kinds of knowledge, but it can't understand the biggest one, which is knowing God, very simply. Human wisdom can never get there. Well, I feel like some people might say, well, you know, the world isn't necessarily trying to know God. That's not really the goal of human wisdom. And I would argue, yeah, it is. The world is looking for meaning and purpose and hope and security. The world is really looking for salvation, even though it would never call it that. The world is looking for God. And all the ways that we apply our human wisdom is somehow to achieve that kind of security and meaning and hope. But it fails to find it. Because human wisdom, the answer that it comes up with in how to achieve this kind of salvation, it says, well, find your purpose in being kind to others. Like, look within, right? Be a good person, right? In essence, human beings said, you want to find meaning and hope and security? Look within yourself. Put it on yourself. Right? You're capable. Right? You can do it. Except what happens when you can't? What happens when you build everything and your identity on being a good person and you fail to be a good person? Pretty sure I'm not the only person in the room that feels like I'm a horrible person sometimes. What happens when you look within and you don't like what you see? You see a whole lot of evil and contempt and bitterness. That's not a viable way to salvation. The cross it runs counter to all of that. Cross, instead of assuming that we can be good, it tells us you can't. Not enough for God's standards, anyway. Instead of making effort as the basis of our worth, the cross says grace is the basis of your worth. And that offends all of our worldly sensibilities, doesn't it? If you're not familiar with Christianity in the church, and you come in one morning, and you just hear me say, you know what, like, you cannot be good enough for God. Never going to find a way on your own to achieve what you're looking for. That would offend you. But that's what the cross says. And the reason that human wisdom cannot know God is because human wisdom really runs opposite to the cross. It cannot accept the cross. It cannot accept the concept of a crucified Messiah. You know, and that's really the message of the cross here. Christ crucified. Christ means Messiah. The one, God, God, crucified. Just, it doesn't register with human wisdom. I mean, that was offensive to the Jews of Jesus' time, wasn't it? Who thought that their glory would come through him using force to overthrow government that was over them. Right? They thought his death in that paradigm was losing. It was offensive to them, and that's why they hated him. Christ crucified is still offensive today. Maybe not for those reasons. But it's offensive because the cross, right? If you think about the symbol of the cross, it means, and the implication of it is, we are sinners, and we need forgiveness. Human wisdom cannot accept that. Like, what do you mean I'm bad? Like, why do I need forgiveness from anybody? Like, you can't judge people. Human wisdom cannot accept grace, real grace, the way that the Bible teaches it. Free grace, like really free grace, unearned, right? Doesn't have to be paid back, no strings attached, unconditional, eternal grace. Like, just, we hear that, we can't accept it. Because that's not how the world works. That's not how we work with other people. How can God be like that? It offends our sensibilities. And maybe that's why even as Christians, we work so hard sometimes to try and earn God's favor. Because we're still in that mindset. The cross is offensive. Everything that it says about us and about the way to God. It's so counterintuitive. It's so countercultural. So opposed to everything and the way that we were brought up and the way the world works. Hard to accept it. And that's precisely why it's the way to God. Because what the cross does when you understand it is it tears down pride. There's no room for pride anymore, if you know what the cross is saying. It tears down self-sufficiency, which blinds us, right? It's a dependence on myself and humanism, which blinds me to knowing God. It destroys those. And it points us to grace, which alone can save us. That's the way to God. The way to God, I don't know who's here today. I don't know. Maybe no one has ever put it to you very simply. So just in case there's someone like that, let me put it to you really simply. The way to God is to put your faith in the Son of God, who God gave to you to go to the cross. And on the cross, what he did is all of the sins that God would exact justice on you for, instead was exacted on him. He took the justice. And so now that he took God's justice, all we get is God's love. And all we get is God's grace. And we're seen as children of God forever. Spotless, pure, forever. That's offensive to the way of the world. It's against human wisdom, but it's the way to God. Third way that the cross is God's wisdom is that it also gives us power. And this is something else I want us to notice here. This word power, which in all this talk about wisdom, now the word power comes up, and so I have to think about this a little bit. Like, what is the relationship there? Okay, like now, like, why in all of this, it seems like the theme is pretty clear in us needing the wisdom of God over the wisdom of the world. Why does it all of a sudden now bring up power? And it's because we can understand everything that I've said up until now. Yeah, you can sit here and everything I said, you can be like, yeah, I agree. I can see how that's true. I can see how the cross is my way to God. But it doesn't guarantee that we're going to actually trust it. It doesn't guarantee that you're actually going to build your life on it and set your eternal hope on it. Because you know what it looks like when you really trust in Christ crucified? You build your identity on it. You know you're loved, and so you live like you know you're loved. When you really understand it, we put our hope in eternity. Like, we really have it set there, even though we do love things in this world. When we really believe it, we grieve sin. When we really believe it, we submit to the demands of the cross, which are there too, to deny self and to follow Christ. And that's ultimately where human wisdom and even just cognitively understanding God's wisdom falls short. Because it can give you information, it can even motivate you, but it cannot give you true, spirit-born, transformative faith. And so it says here, it's not just wisdom that you need. It's not even just God's wisdom that you need. You also need his power. It's the power of God in conjunction with the wisdom of God that produces faith, produces what you're looking for. And specifically, what it says in verse 18 is that it's the message of the cross, which we call the gospel, the word of the cross, that is God's power. And I want us to dwell on that just for a second here. The gospel is not about God's power. It's saying the message is God's power. Let me try to make it concrete here a little bit more. You know how we call some people like powerful speakers? It's not even just Christian, but it's anywhere, right? You see someone and you're like, man, that was a powerful speaker. We see that because there's something about either their presentation or their content that it not only informs us, but it moves us. And I think that's how we got to understand what the gospel is. That's what it means by the word of the cross is the power of God. It's saying that when it's heard, it's not just imparting information. Here's how you get to God. But there's a supernatural power that comes along with it that makes the heart come alive with faith. It gets to the mind and it gets to the heart. It creates understanding and then the faith that's needed to make that understanding come into life. That's what's saying here, wisdom and power of God. And that's why all of us in the room who have come to trust in Jesus, when did that happen for you? Might happen in different ways, but it happened when you heard the gospel. It happened when you heard the message of Christ. Now, it may not have been through a sermon. It might have just been as you were reading the Bible yourself. It may have been through a song, or it may have been through a skit, or what have you. But it was through hearing this word of the cross. You heard it, and you understood it. There is a God who died for me, and I can have it all if I just put my faith in him. And it wasn't merely because we understood it and because I just decided to believe myself. It's because when you heard it, the power of God accompanied that message to you and it made you come alive. And that's also why when we have times of spiritual renewal, okay, it's not just in the beginning, but it's as you go and as times when God revives your spirit, when do those times happen? They're always going to be when you come back to the gospel. When the gospel truth is somehow made real and personal to you and relevant again. Because only the word of the cross has the power to give faith. It's a big takeaway here today. The word of the cross, yeah, it's the wisdom, but it alone has power to change and to transform. Fourth and last way that God's wisdom is expressed through the cross. Let me just point out one more thing here in verse 23, or verse 24. So the word of the cross, gospel, it's not going to be power for everybody. And this passage kind of ends on this melancholy note a little bit. And we know this. Yeah. Not everyone who hears it believes. A lot of people hear it. A lot of people hear it over and over again. It doesn't change them or affect them. And here, Paul says, this is why. It says, only those who are called, only to those who are called by God are going to be the ones where that message is going to come with power to them. Now, in simple terms, this word called, it just means chosen by God. For those of you who look into these things, this would be the concept that we call election and predestination, which is just that God chooses. Okay? God chooses those who will believe, and he gives them faith. Okay? He gives them faith in the work of Christ on the cross, which saves them. I'm going to make a couple comments about this. I was trying to avoid it today, but it's in the passage, so I can't. Okay? You know, predestination gives us trouble because of our tendency to exalt human wisdom. And that's one way you can look at it. The reason why we have such a hard time with it, it's one of those areas where we say, you know, I don't understand how God can be like that. He doesn't really fit in with my standard of fairness, and therefore, God is bad, or God is not good. So as long as that's our worldview, where human wisdom trumps everything, like it's going to be, as it says here, a stumbling block for us. It just is. The biblical view of predestination is different. Okay? The way that the Bible talks about this and the fact that God does call and God does choose, it's never for us a reason for us to call God into question, but it does the opposite. And every time it's written in Scripture and it's alluded to, it always is in the context of really accentuating God's, what it says here, God's power and God's wisdom, right? This holy and good character of God. And to think about it biblically, that's what we need to get as believers. The biblical view of predestination is it really glorifies God. And this is why, right? Use a quick illustration here. From time to time, my wife will ask me, "Do you love me?" At least in the early years of our marriage, of course I would say like, "Yeah, of course I do." You know, how could you ask that? All those things. She would follow that up with, "Why? Why do you love me?" Which always stumped me as a man. It's just like, how do you answer that question, right? So now, because if I say, right, in response to that, well, it's because you're like this. Or it's because you do these things for me. What am I saying to her? I'm saying that I love her because of who she is and what she does. And if you want to follow that logic to the end, the implication there is also that if she ever changes, or if she ever stops doing things for me, then my love goes with it. So you know what predestination says to us according to the Bible? It says that God loves us not because we give or because we serve or because you repent or because you're trying to make godly decisions in your life. It says that he doesn't even love us because we have faith or because we submit to his wisdom in areas like predestination. Says that he loved us far before that. Ephesians 1, he says, he chose us before the creation of the world. Way before I decided to do anything good or bad. He chose me. It says he loves us because he loves us. Because he chose. That's it. He chose. Therefore, he loves, and that also means love's never going to stop. Predestination, when understood correctly, basically comes down to this. I did nothing, God did everything. And he made it that way so that I would be humbled, and at the same time that I would be comforted by that, and so that in the end, he would receive all of the glory. That no one could stand before God and say, he chose me because I did this. No, he chose me because I don't know why. Because he just loves me. All glory to God. Okay? That's the end point of predestination. And that's why predestination is never addressed in the Bible in the way of like applying it to other people, which is how we use it. And we get all twisted up about it and get into arguments about it. It's never. It's always talked about to believers. You need to know you were chosen just because he chose you. And you're loved just because he loves you. So you are secure in him for eternity. Let me just apply all of this to just a few different groups. Okay? First group I'll call the wise, to the wise here. That's just those of you who God has given you faith in the cross. If you're one of those, then just very simply give thanks to God daily for your salvation, okay? Your sweet and precious salvation. Like, why do you believe and other people don't? You ever think about that? Especially those of you who maybe have family members, dad who's not believing. Why do you believe and why does he doesn't? What's so special about us? Well, the difference is not in us. Okay? God did it. God alone. So give thanks daily for salvation that you have. Okay? Never stray from the cross. The minute you stray from the cross, you start getting into pride. And you start getting into legalism. Because you forget who you are. You forget what God has done for you. Okay? Never stray from the cross and work out your salvation. Keep giving effort. Keep working. But always do it rooted in the truth. God will love you to the end. Just because he chose. And nothing will change that. To the unwise, the second group, and I would say that's anyone here who is struggling with faith. Maybe you don't have faith, you can't get there. Maybe you're just in a low point in your faith in this season of your life. Then I would say what you need to do is you need to humble yourself and admit that your human wisdom is limited. You got to get on board with what it's saying here. And I'm so limited in what I can understand. You know, I mean, seek answers to your questions, for sure. Like, I've never been against that. Be honest about your doubt. We should, right? We should. But don't just be getting questions answered, right? And don't just be vocalizing your doubts. Okay? Also, as you're doing that, seek to understand the gospel. Okay? You might think you know it already. If you're struggling that much, I guarantee you don't. Seek to understand the gospel. Learn about Christ. Learn about his cross. Okay, listen to gospel-focused podcasts, sermons, whatever. I mean, there's many resources. I can help you if you want to message me with it, but apply yourself to that, okay? Keep coming. Keep listening. Keep giving attention to understanding. Okay? God, help me to understand the cross. Like, whatever you do, like, just don't give up on that part of it. It says, the word of the cross has power. It has truth in the word of God. The word of the cross has power to give you faith and to revive your faith. So seek it, God, and cry out to him sometimes. God, you said there's power in this. I've heard the gospel a million times. Can you really show me this time? This Sunday as I walk in, can you really show me today? Seek it. And then finally, to all of us who are worried about other people and where they are in their faith, just very simply, let's take the advice of Paul here. And he says, preach Christ crucified, right? I hope you don't take that as some kind of simplistic answer, but if you got a loved one who is not in the faith, you got to keep telling them about the love of God. You just have to keep telling them about the love of God that was displayed on the cross. Because the message of the cross has power. You got to put your faith in that. Okay? Don't be discouraged by lack of responsiveness. Because remember, you can't make people see. And in people who can't see, I mean, the pastor tells us clearly, those who can't see, the gospel is going to be folly to them. It's going to be ridiculous. And so you can expect that kind of reaction. Okay? Don't take it personally. Understand that. That's part of the process. But keep speaking of the love of God to them. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but remember predestination. I think predestination really comes in valuable here. Because then predestination says there's nothing about a person that makes a difference with God. And I think that's helpful when we're dealing with people who are really far away from the Lord, because sometimes they're really opposed. And their lifestyles are just, they've just fallen so far away. But predestination says that does not matter an ounce to God, because it never was about what you did or what you didn't do. It does not affect God's grace to them. Okay? So keep telling them, because it might be that thousandth time they've heard the same old story about the cross. That might be the time when the Spirit comes in power and does what we can never do, which is make them believe. And I would add this too. Keep preaching the cross to them, and then keep showing the cross too. Those always come together. Show the cross by carrying the cross. You know, I just think there is nothing we can do to change a person, but there's a lot that you can do to soften their heart so that every single time they keep hearing about the love of God, it gets closer and closer. Okay? Talk to them with humility, knowing there's nothing about you that merits God's grace either. You're a recipient of just free, undeserving grace like you want them to have. Okay, serve them sacrificially. Okay, love them unconditionally. God is going to use that again to soften their heart as you wait on his timing for when his power comes in their life. So, you know, all this talk about wisdom here, it brought to mind for me the smartest person I ever met. Okay, I'm going to tell you about this guy. No way he's listening, right? We're just going to listen to this later. This was like 20 years ago. But his name was John. We'll just use that to keep anonymity. He's one of those guys, smartest guy I ever met, right? He knew like everything about everything, right? Like Jeopardy champ, like those kinds of guys, right? He wasn't even into sports, but he knew like way more about sports than I did, which is incredible. Like, he didn't even follow sports. He just knew so much about it. He's one of those guys, like, you know, whatever he did, he's like awesome at, you know? And I remember him because whenever I was around him, he made me feel really small. Unintentionally, sometimes intentionally, right? Just, I always walked away from those times with him being like, man, he's so much better than me, you know? Feeling like a loser. I think that's the nature of human wisdom. The nature of human wisdom is that it's like lorded over people, you know? And it always benefits the person who's smart way more than it benefits anyone else around them. But the wisdom of God is the opposite. And that's why it has power too. Because the wisdom of God, like, it doesn't belittle us, but it lifts us up. Right? The cross was of no benefit to him. He did not exert wisdom on the cross for any kind of known benefit to him. It was his loss. He lost so that we could gain. You know, the wisest being in the universe. So wise that all human wisdom looks like foolishness in comparison. He used his wisdom to die for me and to guarantee me hope in a future. So how great is God? And how worthy is he to be praised? And how we must humble ourselves before his wisdom. And there's some things I don't understand, Lord, but you have earned the benefit of the doubt with me. And to walk in faith. There will be doubts. Always. Faith always comes with doubts. Doubts don't mean that you don't believe. But walk in faith, keeping your eyes on the message of the cross until you see him one day. There's no doubts anymore. You see him face to face, and you enter into glory for eternity. Let's pray together.